Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson! Good evening, good evening, good evening. You are listening to Rated LGBT Radio, and I am your host, Rob Watson. Thank you for joining us tonight. Apologies last night because I couldn't be doing this last night. I had literally no voice. I had plenty of thoughts, but no voice. So thanks to all who patiently listened to our past podcasts, which I should mention are always available for you at blogtalk.com/ratedLGBT. So we hope you enjoyed listening to those. Tonight we have a very important show. This is a show about the protection of youth, particularly our transgender youth. Tonight's guest, joining the esteemed Brody Levesque and myself, is Dr. Eliza Byard. Dr. Byard is the executive director of GLESEN, G-L-S-E-N, an organization that is recognized worldwide as the innovative leader in the fight for equality of LGBTQ students, as well as respect for all who happen to be in K through 12 education. We're very excited to talk to her and talk to her about several issues that have happened lately where we've seen transgender young people highly, highly at risk. I want to also, before we start, just to hat tip and pay homage to the great Aretha Franklin who left us today. I particularly want to call out Aretha for not only her soulful and incredible artistry that has literally changed our culture and broken ceilings and was really, you know, in many ways a spiritual musical foundation for a lot of our civil rights. But she was also in many times in her career, and many of her songs were anthems of feminism and standing up for the female nature and the strength of it, which really is the seeds and the bedrock of a lot of our gender fluidity and gender ideas of today. So just deeply grateful for everything that she has done and accomplished in her life and the music she gave us. And with that, I want to turn over our newsroom so we can get some headlines going with our esteemed journalist colleague, Brody Levesque.
Hey, good evening,
Brody.
Rob.
Welcome to the show.
As always, I appreciate it. We had some things happen this week. The first thing that I'd like to highlight, and these are reports from the Los Angeles Blade, our colleague Karen Oakham's outfit, a Santa Cruz County longtime resident and a senior employee, he's actually an analyst and administrator for the County of Santa Cruz, Adam Spickler, has got himself a seat now on the 7-member governing board of Cabrillo Community College in Santa Cruz County. And that's kind of significant because that little community college is actually globally recognized for its nursing program and for its child developmental programs. So congratulations to Mr. Spickler. He made history because he is the first trans man to hold elected office in the state of California. Now, there is another individual running for office, ironically enough, on a school board, Martin Rawlings Fien, who is running in San Francisco, and he's hoping to secure a seat on the city of San Francisco's school board. But Adam ran unopposed, and under California law, he'll be appointed. He's being appointed to a seat that was being vacated by Gary Reese, a 72-year-old retired Pasatiempo resident, and so hats off to Adam. We had a little bit of a controversy this week. The Walt Disney Corporation, or actually more accurately, the producers of a Disney film called Jungle Cruise, which is loosely based on the ride there at Disneyland and, of course, at Walt Disney World. And they're, I think, hoping, or at least Disney's hoping, to turn this into a successful franchise, just like they did with Pirates of the Caribbean, which, if you'll remember, was also based on a ride at Disneyland. But the problem was that the producers of this particular film decided to cast Jack Whitehall, who is a 30-year-old British comedian, to what would actually be the Walt Disney Company's first openly gay character. There's been a couple of characters, most recently in one of the productions that Disney ran, having to do with Beauty and the Beast, where there was the character was actually implied, but in this case, this character actually is openly gay. And that touched off a firestorm of criticism. Most prominent was Egyptian-Canadian actor and gay activist Omar Sharif Jr., and Omar on Twitter tweeted the following: "Really at Disney, hashtag Jungle Cruise, question mark. Your first significant gay role will be played by a straight white man, and using stereotypes, fail. This ship should sink." I should mention that a producer at Disney told the LA Blade that the character is a feat, which is, quite frankly, these days a very offensive stereotype. So we're going to give the Walt Disney Corporation a big thumbs down. There are enough talented actors out there who are, in fact, gay that, you know, probably should have, you know, an opportunity to be able to stretch their wings and do their thing. There's been a lot of argument about, well, it's just acting, blah, blah, blah. And it's, no, we're at a point now where, like with Scarlett Johansson, we don't need straight people playing gay roles. We need gay people and trans people and lesbian people and queer people playing these roles, because they have been shut out of the motion picture industry and the television industry for way too long. So, like I said, thumbs down to the Disney Corporation. A little update on a story that we had from back in May. A 22-year-old Portland State University student who was severely injured after being, we think, tossed from a train near Truckee, California. Aaron Salazar is now on the mend. He's been moved to the Craig Rehabilitation Hospital in Inglewood, Colorado, which is in suburban Denver. I spoke with Sonia Trujillo, who was a guest on our show, and also with Austin, who came on at the same time. Aaron is now talking. He is eating regular food. They've moved him out of bed. He still has a trach, but he's not using it. They've got him in a wheelchair, and he's now starting to undergo, obviously, physical therapy. The only downside to it, as Austin relayed on Facebook, was that he doesn't remember what happened. And the doctors at Craig say that that's completely normal due to both the mix of the severity of the injury to his brainstem and also his brain protecting him from remembering the event, although doctors are saying at some point Aaron should remember, which would hope be a good thing since the Amtrak Police Department isn't really doing much with this case, and the family is still calling for an investigation by the FBI. Germane to our conversation this evening, very, very, very sad news out of Los Angeles last week. A board member of Gleason, an up-and-coming artist, a Point Foundation scholar, and a genuinely neat individual, and activist, Casey Hoke, died. Casey, unfortunately, according to his brother, Ryan, was having mental health issues. And in a statement to the Los Angeles Blade, Ryan said that Casey lost his battle with mental illness. The Los Angeles County Coroner's Office still hasn't issued a determination on that, but it's pretty sad. And then the last thing that we'll also be talking about with Dr. Baird, especially since we are beginning school all over the place in the United States, is a young 12-year-old trans student who was subject of some seriously ugly, nasty, violent attacks on Facebook. They got so bad, I'll read a couple of the worst ones. One commenter wrote, you know, we have open hunting season on NEMCON, ain't no bag limit. Another one wrote, if he wants to be a female, make him a female. A good sharp knife will really do the job quick, misgendering this young lady. It got to the point where the mother of this young girl filed for a protective order against the people that were making these comments. And by the way, the comments were being made in a parents group on Facebook for this particular elementary school in Achille, Oklahoma, which is just north of the border with Texas along the Red River. It got pretty ugly. So it's one of the things, though, that I have to note, which was positive about that story, was that the local sheriff, Bryan County, Oklahoma Sheriff Johnny Christian, fired up his entire staff, got the deputies out there. They are seriously investigating this, and they're working their best, you know, to make sure that, you know, something happens in a positive way. The school superintendent, Rick Bean, said that the group, the Facebook group, was not endorsed by the school district. In an interview he did with the LA Blade, the superintendent, and I quote the superintendent, our kids, our parents, most of our community is very, very good people, very open to all ethnicities, all populations, and really we've got a group of kids that love each other. We know of no bullying as far as this one situation, except for this one situation. They actually got so bad, they were so concerned that the sheriff, in conjunction with the superintendent, closed the schools on Monday and Tuesday. I should note that Achille, Oklahoma is a small town and has a population of about 492 people. And this virtually is one of those towns where everybody knows everybody else. So as you can imagine, there was considerable blowback from this particular situation. So that's kind of highlighting the news this week, courtesy of the Los Angeles Blade. Thanks to Karen Oakham and her staff over there for the fine work that they do. And that's what's going on, Rob.
Okay, Brody, a couple things. One, I want to shout out to Adam Spickler and just point out for people in the local Santa Cruz area, I had the opportunity to interview Adam live on stage at Santa Cruz Pride. And this weekend, this Sunday, on at Pajaro Valley Pride in Watsonville, I will again be interviewing Adam, who now, as you pointed out, is the first elected transgender male in the history of the state of California. So we will have the opportunity to get his first public statements this Sunday. And I will have my handy-dandy recorder with me, so I'll probably be recording some of those to get on the air at some point as well. But big shout-out to my friend Adam on making history. Brody, one of the other stories I wanted to ask you about is the commentary by the Catholic League regarding mm-hmm. The ruling about the abuse of priests. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, it wasn't a ruling. What happened was a special impaneled grand jury in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania released a report to the state's attorney general, the Commonwealth Attorney General, and in there it detailed decades of horrific sexual abuse. The victims number well over 1,000 as far as the the grand jury could tell. It was a rather lengthy investigation. We're talking, you know, over a year. Unfortunately, the vast majority of those cases, because of the law and statute of limitations in Pennsylvania, these priests will not be charged in criminal ways for this. Now, what happened was there is a particular individual who runs it's called the Catholic League in New York. His name is Bill Donahoe. And Bill is, he's just known for being extremely anti-gay. It's incredible. And he absolutely defends, you know, the Catholic Church, regardless of what the evil is. And he basically said that the report was a lie. I mean, he sat there and called it a lie.
I have a couple of points on his rebuttal. This man is evil. I am sorry. This man is as bad as many of the perpetrators, in my opinion. His justification of what happened is unthinkable. He characterizes half, because of the 300 cases that were being examined, 150 were quote-unquote unsubstantiated, meaning they didn't have somebody else there witnessing. So half of them are substantiated. These other half, that because somebody else doesn't witness, in criminal justice and in cases like this, when a pattern is set up, those still are very – they're still credible. It doesn't mean they didn't happen. And he dismisses them as and treats them in his commentary as if they are complete fiction, and writes them off. But the worst thing about his commentary is what he determines as quote-unquote rape, which means that he doesn't count anything as quote-unquote rape unless there is penetration. So all of the molestation, all of the abuse, all of the horror that these young people were put through, in his mind, speaking for the Catholic League, is not rape. And as the father of two teen boys, that to me is absolutely unconscionable, unthinkable, and horrific. And the man should be stripped from whatever position, title, spokesperson, whatever he is. He is way crossed the line, in my parental opinion. And other than that, I don't have a single thought about it.
No, that's fine. I think before we go to Dr. Beard, that I should point out that one of the reasons that this special grand jury report is critical also is because of the fact that a lot of this abuse occurred within the Catholic private school system, which, as you may be aware of, you know, we've had trouble all over the place trying to get recognition for GSAs and for LGBTQI students. And so that's kind of a big headache. And with that, I'll let you bring the doc on.
Okay. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce and welcome to the show Dr. Eliza Bard. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Dr. Bard, welcome to our show.
Hi.
Fired.
It's
okay.
Very good to be with you. And Eliza is just fine.
Well, we're very polite here, so be prepared.
Absolutely.
Dr. Bard, why don't you tell us a little bit about the mission of Gleason, just to give our listeners some background?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm really glad to be with you. And appreciate the focus tonight on Casey, who was such a big part of Gleason's life for many years. So Gleason was founded in 1990 to try to end the bias and violence directed at LGBTQ people in K-12 schools. It was an organization. The organization was founded by parents and teachers and students who came together to try to show the education world that, one, there was such a thing as an LGBTQ youth case in K-12 schools, and that something needed to be done to improve what school was like for them. Over the years, we've grown quite a bit, and we are now an organization that's active in all 50 states here and networked with partners around the world to illuminate what's happening on LGBTQ issues in primary and secondary education, what LGBTQ youth lives are like, how they can be supported and affirmed everywhere, and how to build power to ensure that anti-LGBTQ prejudice basically is no longer transmitted to younger generations in school.
Eliza, good evening. It's Brody, and it's always nice to talk to you, and welcome to the show. Casey was a very, very important part of your organization. He started off as a student ambassador when he was in high school, and I believe that's when you first encountered him, and he kind of worked his way up to essentially being one of your bosses, sitting on the board of directors. I found him to be just an amazing individual. And I think that, you know, although tragic, he still does leave, you know, a legacy. And let's talk a little bit about that. If you wouldn't mind kind of articulating who Casey was and what he represented to the organization, to you personally, and then some of the things that he accomplished, which I think are significant, so that our listeners kind of get a grasp of who he was.
Absolutely. Well, I will tell you that, in general, one of the incredible privileges of my job, I've now been on staff at GLSEN for 18 years, 10 of them as executive director. But student leaders are core partners and a core part of GLSEN's operations always. And I've met wave after wave of unbelievably brave and dedicated student leaders over time. And Casey began his work with GLSEN in 2014. He was at the time going to school in Kentucky, and he first got engaged with GLSEN chapters in his region, so GLSEN Bluegrass and GLSEN Cincinnati. GLSEN is a national organization, and we have a chapter network, a volunteer chapter network all across the country. We work with about 6,500, directly with about 6,500 gay straight alliances, and tens of thousands of individual educators and student leaders in their schools. Casey began with us in a program, so he worked with locally doing workshops and in leadership locally, and then he applied to be a member of our national student ambassador team. And, you know, one of the things that always gives me great hope for the future is that we run these programs where we can take, you know, maybe 18 to 24 young people for the program at the national level, and we'll get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of applicants. So our programs end up, you know, being more selective than many colleges. And it's always a real struggle because there are so many remarkable folks out there. Casey always really stood out. He was always notable for being very sharply dressed, for being incredibly focused and thoughtful about why he did the things he did. And I was always just struck by just this aspect he brought. He was an artist, as he's noted, and he brought a creative spirit and great intentionality to everything. The workshops he created for the local youth summits that he was part of with our chapter network, the ambassadorial work he did for GLSEN, his public speaking at youth summits and elsewhere, and his thinking about his own trajectory. How was he going to make his way in the world as a trans man? And how is he going to make his way in the world as an artist and advocate? His workshops were about art and advocacy and creative advocacy that, you know, there's so many different ways to make change. I myself, I'm not an artist. He was. And I really loved learning from him and others a way about how their artistic expression was core for them to making change. And as you can tell, I could go on and on. He was a really remarkable, remarkable person.
Eliza, one of the things that, and I'm trying to figure out how to frame this question, because I've seen so many young people and not so young people who have been transgender activists that have gotten into positions where they're working in their advocacy, they are surrounded many times in what they're working on with allies and other activists and, you know, part of, you know, the bigger cause, et cetera, and then find out that they just in the exposure of the general world, are still in a vulnerable position to the transphobia and the ignorance that is out there. And I relate to that, having grown up gay and you know, through the 80s, and, you know, where, you know, it was, you know, any given day in the away from the bubble, you were exposed to, you know, just rank homophobia that today would shock people. I mean, it's become minimized to that effect. But how do we stay conscious of their needs through this, that even when they're seemingly in some sort of bubble, that they in fact are very exposed?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there are a couple of things to unpack there. I mean, one is that I think for Casey, coming from Kentucky and Ohio, his work in Kentucky and Ohio, he sought out the bubble in a certain way. And I think for many of the students that we work with, we're always thoughtful about the fact that anytime a student is involved in an intense program and that has some travel and sort of group work to it, then they go home. And it's really important to know that students have a support network when they go home. And then, of course, for those students who become very visible in their advocacy, I mean, certainly think about the Parkland students. Once you are visible to the world, there are people out there that will, in specific ways, want to do you harm, at least to, you know, put you down. And then, of course, there's the daily, very daily insult of microaggressions and sometimes even well-intentioned behavior that may call out and trigger feelings around, you know, how you want to look versus how you look, who you are internally and how the world perceives you. And these are all pressures that, you know, I myself am not, I'm not a transgender experience, but I am able to work closely with people who are and just observe what a specific way it is to move through the world. I think the other thing we have to remember is that mental health issues are real and they are powerful. And, you know, it's only recently that our country has begun to take them seriously as health issues and provide the kind of insurance coverage and compassionate response that they deserve. And that's a really potent combination. We know it's particularly pervasive in the lives of trans people, that the need for, excuse me, mental health supports, the need for good care is really heightened for the community just at the same time that those kinds of services in a trans-affirming setting really may not be available to the people who need them most. So, you know, for me personally, I'm always concerned that the students we work with have the support they need, whether it's from us or from others, and that they make very conscious decisions and choices, and that when possible, family and guardians are closely involved when they decide to become more public with their advocacy, because it is a very significant combination of stresses to be in that position publicly.
Well, it's a little hard to escape, I think, the glare of publicity at a certain point, as the Parkland kids have told me, and I've spoken to them, and these are amazing young people. But I think, and going back to what you said, Eliza, you know, when we look at it statistically, suicide is the second leading cause of death among young people in general, ages 10 to 24. And according to the Centers for Disease Control and the Trevor Project, suicide attempts by LGBTI and questioning queer youth are probably 4 to 6 times more likely. You know, Casey was extremely visible. This is not a person who shied away from, you know, his responsibilities to carrying out his advocacy work, his work on your board. I think probably some signals and so forth got missed and people didn't catch them or they didn't realize it. You know, from your position as the executive director of an organization that deals with these kids directly and GSAs and things like that, what type of policies have you guys thought about in terms of formulation as part of your overall, you know, programs, especially now in light of, you know, Casey's passage?
Sure. I just want to come back to the thing about things get missed. I think more than things getting missed, just before I will absolutely turn to that framework, more than things getting missed is that it can be very, very difficult for a trans person to find the kind of trans competent and affirming care that they need, right? So in the largest survey of transgender adults, more than half of the respondents aged 18 to 25 reported experiencing current and very serious psychological distress. And 82% of all the respondents in the survey had seriously thought about killing themselves at some point in their lives. That's the rate of actual attempts is actually 9 times higher, as you say. But, you know, for this population specifically, 23% of the respondents in that survey didn't go to a doctor when they needed to because they were worried about being mistreated as a trans person. And 33% didn't go see a doctor because they couldn't afford it. So I think we also need to be really aware of the fact that all of us live in a larger context of the United States of America and the current situation in terms of the accessibility of healthcare for anyone, and then on top of that, the specific issue of finding healthcare that is affirming for trans people makes it a bit of a needle in the haystack. Now, all of that being said, and thinking about how to create an affirming environment for trans people, you know, I will say GLSEN's focus is on school-based support. So we look at what's available in a school, K through 12, for any trans person. But let's not forget, this really underscores for us why something like universal access to high-quality healthcare and trans-competent and trans-affirming healthcare is a huge issue. For anyone who cares about LGBTQ people. I've been working now on these issues for a long, long time in schools. We have several things we've got to get into place. One is the universal understanding that trans students exist at all ages. They deserve, both by law and as a matter of morals, they deserve to go to school in peace. And when a school, something that people really need to understand is that when a school quietly and without fanfare provides complete access to education for a trans person, in general, there are no problems within the school community. There was a long track record before 2016 of trans students being in schools where they were completely accepted and affirmed in states that had trans non-discrimination at the state level. And when Media Matters did a study of the largest districts in those states, they asked how many issues they'd had related to trans students' access to bathrooms and locker rooms. And to a one, every single district said zero. One district had a problem, and it was because of a parent. So when this is handled well, it creates no problems for the school community. And when it's done badly, and when adults don't live up to their responsibilities, their results can be absolutely horrifying. So,
yeah. Well, speaking of adults not living up to their responsibilities, Brody, in his opening news, talked about the 12-year-old in Oklahoma that has been absolutely terrorized by adults going after her, and the these attacks that even a strong adult would have trouble with. I'm the father of two teens, and one is very outgoing and, you know, wears his feelings on his sleeve, and I know what's going on with him pretty much all the time. And the other one is very closed and guarded, and digging things out of him is always a challenge. So, and my point about the difference between the two is that when you're dealing with a 12-year-old who has been subjected to this in this environment with adults acting poorly and badly, what is your advice to the school and the parents, not only in just solving this immediate circus, but for the long-term mental health of that child, so that that all that attack is not absorbed and, to your point, creating this mental illness havoc?
Well, first and foremost, any adult who would seek to harm a child should be seriously ashamed of themselves. I mean, what have we come to in this country where we have emboldened people who will? I mean, I'm a parent, too. I have two daughters, 13 and 8. And the idea that any parent in a school community would be talking about physical assault on a child is just repulsive and despicable. I mean, I can't put the right words to it. But the thing I'll say, and the thing that actually gives me great hope in this story out of Oklahoma, are two things. One, Brody, is the thing you pointed out about the response of the county sheriff. The other are the remarks made by the superintendent, who I heard speaking about needing to learn and to do better by this student in response to what was happening. From the remarks that I saw, I really thought that those were really responsible adult responses to what was going on. But the final thing was what the students did when the school came back into session. I don't know if the two of you saw that story. I think this was yesterday. When the school came back into session, the students staged a walkout in support of that young girl. And the local authorities were out in force to protect the students as they had this walkout. And they'd set up an area for counter-protesters in case any adult was willing to show their face as someone who wanted to harm a seventh grader. And I'm pleased to tell you that nobody showed up in counter-protest at that school. And the students themselves sent an extremely powerful message. Here's the thing. When any vulnerable member of a school community is attacked, whether it's by a bully, whether it's a bully of any age, I should say, or an outsider, the most important thing for that student is to understand and have affirmed that they are a beloved member of that community, valued and esteemed. And, at some level, this is so visceral, and it's not rocket science. It's really about the kind of social and emotional competencies and learning and empathy that I hope we will all be focusing on instilling in generations to come. These students took it upon themselves to make sure that their fellow student knew that she was welcome, and they would stand up for her. And when an adult was acting badly and talking about doing violence to a child, they went out and walked in support of her. One of our watchwords at GLSEN recently has been "Let Youth Lead." Frankly, we support Gay Straight Alliance student clubs all over the country. We nurture and ally with student leaders, and we work with schools to create the school climates where the whole child is supported and nurtured and can thrive. And as much as anything else, connection to community is what saves lives. You know, there's nothing ultimately. Depression and other forms of mental illness are so powerful that there are some things that are beyond our reach. There are other things that are not. And when we create beloved community and demonstrate respect and love for all, that can overcome quite a bit. Not everything, but it is the thing that all of us have within our power.
I think
that's amazing.
I think
thank
that's
you for
pretty
sharing
much
that.
It. Yeah. Well, one of the, you know, I had met and interviewed your founder numerous times, and I always found him to be incredible. And in his role in the education department later on, even more so. But now we'll fast forward to this administration, this Secretary of Education, and some of the things that are going on. You had previously mentioned about, you know, I think environmental atmosphere. It just seems to me that this administration, this Secretary of Education, has suddenly given license to this kind of nonsense. As we start this new school year and the vitriol doesn't seem to be slowing down, what do you think about in terms of when you and your board and your staff get together, you know, and you guys are formulating how you're going to start this year and look at it? Keeping Casey's legacy, quite frankly, in the forefront. Talk to me a little bit about that, Eliza. What's going to happen moving forward? You know, this is an important time, and quite frankly, I think we're all feeling a little bit under siege, and particularly our youth.
Yes, well, a couple of things that I think it's such an important thing to highlight. First and foremost, I want to start with the fact we should remember that when it comes down to it, what heartens me is that there are more good people out there than bad people, right? What we've experienced at GLSEN since the election and the swell of fear, anxiety, and then outright violence in schools that we've seen, violent incidents, we've experienced an incredible upsurge of educators connecting with GLSEN and downloading our resources, volunteers coming into our chapter network, continued growth in student leadership through gay-straight alliances around the country, and a determination on the part of caring adults in schools all across this country to do something, hold the line, to support and nurture our children and instill respect for all in their school communities despite what's happening in Washington, D.C. Now, the fact is that folks in D.C. should really ought to be ashamed of themselves for the ways that they are doing several things. One is there is, of course, a real effort to undermine public education and to undo the role of the federal government in civil rights oversight and enforcement. What that means is that they are actively breaking things that work to increase educational equity and access. Since 2008, GLSEN has worked closely. We work closely with the Department of Education, the Department of Justice in the previous administration, and with a whole range of partners, organizational partners, in a nationwide bullying prevention effort that was actually spearheaded by the Department of Education. And as a result, as more and more states added enumerated LGBT inclusive bullying prevention policies or laws at the state level, as more and more schools began to take school climate seriously as part of their work, we actually affected collectively as a society, we affected a really significant reduction from 2005 to 2015 in rates of bullying directed at students generally across the country. At GLSEN, we were working very hard on very LGBTQ-specific aspects of this effort, and we saw a sustained reduction in anti-LGBTQ bullying and harassment across the country between 2005 and 2015. I mean, when I began my work at GLSEN on staff in the early 2000s, I actually was having debates on TV with Bill O'Reilly about whether bullying was a character-developing experience for young people, right? That's where the debate was 18 years ago. Today, no one will argue that bullying is a good idea. The mental health consequences for bully and target and bystander alike are well understood. But now, the progress in actually addressing the problem was only possible because of the leadership we experienced at the federal level, and specifically leadership that was focusing on the most at risk, whether those students were young students of color, immigrant students, religious minorities, transgender students, gender nonconforming students, girls and young women, and LGB folks. So we were making progress, and now they're dismantling it, and you can actually begin to see the results. So specifically on trans issues, it is absolutely unconscionable that the first action that this Secretary of Education took when she came into office was to pull back life-saving guidance from the Department of Education about trans students' rights under Title IX. Absolutely ludicrous, actively violent against one of the most at-risk populations in this country. I had the opportunity to meet with her right after she did that. And we went in with some organizational partners and took a group of parents and trans students to meet with the secretary to talk about what she'd just done. And, you know, the thing I have to say is they went in, took aim at something that was actually beginning to make a huge difference for more trans youth than had previously been receiving the support they deserve. Now, when they took that guidance away, trans students still have the same rights under federal law that they had before and under state law that they had before in some states. But schools got entirely the wrong and destructive signal from the secretary's actions. Later we learned, to their incredible shame and no logic whatsoever, that the Office for Civil Rights at the Department of Education is now refusing to accept discrimination claims and investigate discrimination claims that involve bathroom access for trans students, which is a ludicrous distinction that has no footing in the law. And more federal circuit courts decisions are coming down upholding the right of trans students to have full access to an equal education and to school facilities, and really distilling the ample evidence that trans inclusion in no way harms anybody else. The other thing I want to underscore for you, and thank you for letting me go on, because obviously this stuff hits the nerve.
No, it's riveting.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, so appreciate that.
The other thing that hits a nerve and that we all need to be paying attention to as LGBTQ people and anyone who cares about LGBTQ people, youth, adults, anybody, is that the ridiculous fear-mongering about religious liberty that's going on right now is very dangerous to us specifically. Yeah. And we've got to pay attention. At the end of last month, Attorney General Jeff Sessions hosted a quote-unquote religious liberty summit at the Department of Justice and characterized women's reproductive health and LGBT rights as part of a dangerous and unappreciatedly dangerous movement afoot in this country that must be defeated by proactive action by the Department of Justice. This is weaponizing our own government against us in a situation where there actually is no evidence that there's a problem, right? What we have is a situation where over the last decade, we actually began to experience America as an idea that was available to queer people, to people of color, to students with disabilities, to trans people, to immigrants, you know, to dreamers. We suddenly began to have that step forward into actual access all across this country, and here they come to try to slam the door. And we've got to appreciate. So in my line of work, I was talking to you earlier about, say, access to trans-affirming healthcare supports. Well, what happens if you're a trans student in a rural area and the only support you have is the presence of a psychologist in your school? Well, there are things that are being put forward now that say that psychologist, if they happen to have a strongly held personal belief that you're sinful, they can refuse to provide the professional service they've been hired to provide you. And if you live in a remote rural area, where are you going to go? You know, we've got voucher programs coming online in different parts of the country where voucher money, public money, is going to institutions that explicitly, by policy, say they're going to discriminate against LGBTQ people. We see now that teachers can get married. We see more and more flashpoints where teachers who are beloved parts of their community are being disciplined, suspended, or fired when the school administration finds out that they're lesbian or gay, married to someone of the same sex, and all in the name of religious liberty. And it's really something that is being turned against us in a very powerful way. And in that environment, it's just, we've all got to be paying attention because the stakes are very, very real.
Right. Eliza, I live in, I guess we were talking about bubbles, but Santa Cruz County has had Queer Youth Leadership Awards for, I think this is the 22nd annual award ceremony that they're having. GSAs, QSAs are in most of the schools. I talked to my sons and they, you know, in passing will mention a transgender friend of theirs and I'll start asking questions and they give me a weird look like I was asking about a redheaded friend about how they feel, how they're doing. It's like, what's the deal? What's your, why? I mean, in other words, it has become so matter of fact for them that they, to even imply otherwise feels strange to my teens, which is a good thing in my opinion. Kind of doomsday scenario for you though. The midterms are coming up. If the current administration stays as powerful as it is right now, what do you think the end game on this? What do you think the end effect of everything you've been describing will?
Well, listen, I have to be, in my line of work, I always have to be hopeful, which is different than being optimistic. But I will tell you that I have very concrete grounds for feeling that even in the absence of a complete flip at the midterms, the thing I see indisputably across the country is a groundswell of support for at-risk youth and a groundswell of allyship from concerned adults with students who are leading the way for the future that they want and that they deserve, right? As you point out, we know now that 82% of students in America have an LGBTQ person in their lives. 72% of students report they know an LGBTQ student at their school, and about 23% say they have an LGBTQ family member. 2.2% of students in America have an LGBTQ parent. So the revolutionary effect of LGBTQ people coming out and being visible over the last, say, four decades in this country is that we are an established part of life everywhere. We are your friends and neighbors, we're your family. And our family members and our friends and neighbors are standing up for us as well as standing up for youth of color. I think there's a lot more that needs to be done, youth of color on immigration. So we face a political and institutional crisis in terms of reclaiming the institutions that are meant to make life better for everyone in this country that are being systematically dismantled. But we have a reservoir of goodness, that's all I can say, because I get to see it all the time in the people who are mobilizing to do the right thing and come together in defense of students' rights to forge a better future for themselves and their peers and the people they care about.
Liza, before I get to what's probably going to end up being the last question, because we're getting a little close to the end of our time here, to our listeners, I have a request from the executive director of Oklahomans for Equality, my good friend Toby Jenkins in Tulsa at the Donald McKeel Center.
Yep.
If you guys would like to help Toby and his staff out, they're requesting that letters of support for the young lady we've been talking about, Maddie, the 12-year-old, and her family. We'll go to the superintendent's office, and the superintendent will forward them. So if you guys would like to do that, please write to Rick Beane, B-E-E-N-E, at Post Office Box 280, Achille, Oklahoma. That's A-C-H-I-L-L-E, Oklahoma, 74720. And he is the superintendent of the Achille School District. And Toby and my friends at Oklahomans for Equality would seriously love you for doing that. Eliza, we're down to our last couple of minutes. Looking ahead, we've got a new school year. What's your overall and overarching priority that's probably at the very top of your to-do list?
Well, I got to say that the other thing that I hope your listeners might choose to do is, as we go back to school, get in touch with the schools that you attended yourself. Write to the teachers who were and the administrators who were meaningful to you and tell them your hopes for what they will do to support all the students in their care and charge. We have a number of resources that can go back to school. There's the Glisten Safe Space Kit, which is designed for middle and high schools. It can be downloaded for free. It can be purchased with the Safe Space poster and sticker. There's a toolkit for grades K through 5 called Ready, Set, Respect that we made alongside the National Association of Elementary School Principals and the National Association for the Education of Young Children. So Ready, Set, Respect, K through 5, the Safe Space Kit for middle and high schools. If you write to the school you attended, anyone out there listening, you let them know, what was your life like when you were there? How would you like it to be better, different for students there now? Or what were the things that made a difference for you that they hope you hope they're still doing for the students who are going to show up starting next week or the week after in schools across the country? There may be folks out there who still think, oh, there are no LGBT youth in our school. But we know that we are everywhere and these students are everywhere. And there are simple beginning steps that anyone can take to show love, care, support, and connection to the students who may need it most. So GLSEN is here to help at glsen.org. And if you hear about a controversy locally where a GSA student club is under attack or a teacher who's been supportive of LGBTQ youth is coming under fire, or good policies are in place and someone wants to strip them out, those things matter. And your voice can matter when that happens. So I hope everyone listening will think about the ways they can show up and support. We're at a difficult time
right
now.
Thank you.
And when we, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. And yes, people need to make contact. Luckily, this is a podcast, so they can rewind it and get all the information that you and Brody just shared to make that contact. Dr. Baird, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight. I want to thank Brody, as always, and I want to thank our listeners for being part of this very important discussion, and please pass it along. We will be back again next week, the same time, with another Rated LGBT Radio with one of the hottest LGBTQ topics of the day. Also, listen to Out in Santa Cruz on www.ksco.com Saturday night, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. This week, we will be talking to Lisa Cisneros, who is the Grand Marshal of Pajaro Valley Pride and legal defense for LGBTQ people at risk. I'm Rob Watson, and I thank you very much for being part of this, as always. And we will talk to you again next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.